First up, an animal with a stompy reputation, but that's surprisingly light on its feet, the elephant. Living alongside them has its challenges, not least their appetite for crops that you might be growing. We begin this story in the heart of southern Africa, where farmers and scientists are trialling unconventional deterrents against free-ranging, crop-raiding elephants.
The only signs that you would know that elephants have been in these areas is dung, and there's a lot of elephant poo.
Dr. Tempe Adams lives in rural Botswana. An elephant's visit in the night.
You wake up in the morning and you can see that they've been through, and obviously their tracks. And maybe you can see some browsing damage done when they've been eating some trees. They come in very quietly.
Botswana's home to about 2.5 million people. How many elephants are there?
Hotly debated, but officially, scientifically speaking, there's estimated to be around 130,000 elephants in Botswana at the moment. Obviously, that fluctuates based on seasonality, because what's amazing about Botswana's elephants is they're also Zimbabwe's elephants, they're also Namibia's elephants, all our neighbouring countries, so we don't have fenced boundaries largely throughout the country, so elephants can freely move in and out of the country.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. Elephants don't respect the lines that we draw on maps. So where do they tend to cross paths with people?
So we have urban towns, and then we have a lot of farming areas that sit right alongside wildlife protected areas. And a lot of the elephant range is outside of the protected areas as well, because as I said, they're free ranging, big moving animals, so they need a lot of space. So elephants, it's not uncommon on a daily basis walking through our farming areas here.
Wherever you find animals living around people or people pushing into their habitat, usually don't have to look too far to find friction between the humans and their surrounding species. So what are some of the conflicts between people and elephants in Botswana?
Yeah, I mean, it can take so many different forms. I mean, the whole definition of conflict is a negative interaction. We love to use the word interaction now as science. It can be you're walking to work and you might see an elephant off in the distance. And, you know, you're literally walking in a space where elephants walk. It could be that you're on a bus going off to soccer practice and there's an elephant on the side of the road and you have to sort of navigate how do you get your vehicle past that animal. It can be you are a crop farmer and you've got your maize crop ripening beautifully in the field and an elephant might come by your crop that night and you have to scare it away, or maybe you're too scared to scare it away, and trying to navigate those situations. So interactions with elephants that have sort of a negative consequence or negative feeling, whether it makes you feel unsafe or it's literally damage from them, caused by them eating their crops. What I've always been fascinated by is why are these elephants moving through these different areas? Is it to crop raid? Is it to come and eat these crops? Or is it to move through pathways that they were always used to move through and suddenly we're developing over them? That's a different kind of conflict. That's a different cause of the conflict. Is it to access water and resources? And what we've actually found in Botswana is one of the lead causes of these people and elephants coming into closer contact with each other, because Botswana is very dry, is about water and access to water. And not surprisingly, a lot of our farming is along these permanent waterways or semi-permanent waterways, and those are the exact areas that elephants need to access to drink water to survive.
Ah, yes, water. This is the source of many conflicts, sorry, interactions, between humans and animals, not just in Africa, but around the world.
So yes, there is opportunistic crop raiding when they smell ripening crops. It's very hard to resist not going in and eating them. But a lot of it is actually just people and elephants coming into contact around water resources, whether it's floodplains or artificial water holes. So our conflict is driven largely by water.
When an elephant does walk through a crop, whether to get to the river that's on the other side or to eat whatever delicious food is in the paddock, I don't imagine they tiptoe in and then delicately make their way out again. What kind of damage can an elephant do just making its way through a crop?
Well, that's what's really interesting. Actually, every elephant's different. Sometimes you will have very polite elephants that literally step over the fences.
Oh, how very nice.
And step over, out of the fences. There's some great videos online, actually, just if you Google elephants stepping over fences, it's quite, or climbing under fences even. It's quite amazing, actually, for such a big animal. They can definitely climb under fences sometimes. But I think it depends on the elephant itself. But that does vary from country to country even, actually, or district to district. I mean, an elephant can, depending on the size of the crop, could eat the whole crop in the night. And when you're a subsistence farmer, that's huge. It literally presents a very, very big issue, no pun intended.
Now, you mentioned fencing before. What sort of measures have people traditionally used to try to keep elephants out?
The traditional form of fencing is made from the acacia branches. So they've got these big, big spines and thorns on them. Farmers will often light a fire. So most farmers, if they can, they'll have someone stay by the field when the crops are growing, whether they're in a tent or they've built themselves a little hut. Some have a little actual house structure on the crop fields. So having that human presence there is really important. And then they will bang drums when they can hear something coming. Not literally a drum. More often than not, people have an old barrel, you know, a fuel barrel, and bang a barrel. So make whatever noise they can, even hand clapping. They'll shine torches or we'll have that fire going. So then we'll wave a fire branch around. Anything to let that animal know, I see you, get out of my field.
And that means scientists have to use ingenuity as well. There's a whole range of things people have tried to keep elephants away from crops.
The whole science of elephant deterrence has blown up in the last 20 years.
And that is largely due to this woman.
I had quite an unusual upbringing.
Dr. Lucy King.
My parents were both teachers and we were brought up in Somalia, Lesotho and then Kenya.
Her childhood experiences on safari shaped her ideas.
And I was just blown away, not only by the wild animals and the experience of living and camping in the bush, but particularly by this juxtaposition of seeing these beautiful wild animals coming hard up against fences.
Such as electric fences. And you might think, well, a little zap's not going to stop an elephant. But these fences can have 16 strands of wire with 8,000 volts of electricity running through them.
I mean, they really do shock an elephant if they touch it. But I really felt quite passionate as a teenager growing up that animals, particularly elephants, should be able to roam freely. So this wild animal interest, but also how they clash with humans, has been something that's been part of my world for a long time.
Lucy went off to uni to study zoology, then returned to Kenya to look into cheaper, better, and more natural alternatives to electric fences to stop or at least put off elephants from raiding crops. And her very first idea came from local folklore.
We discovered that the rural livestock farmers who were out in the bush knew that elephants wouldn't attack or forage on or push over trees in the savannah which had wild beehives in. And we heard this folklore and were absolutely intrigued by this and just went, is it possible that a tiny bee can keep an elephant from pushing a tree down to feed on the branches? Could we prove that this folklore was real? So we came up with a whole load of experimental ideas to test whether elephants were scared of bees. And can you imagine how difficult this is? You've got a wild African honeybee, which could literally kill you if you mess around with it.
This is no exaggeration. African honeybees are aggressive. And when they attack as an army. They've killed hundreds of people.
So it was a really difficult experiment and both of these species could kill me.
In the end, to show that elephants are indeed scared of African bees.
Where we came up with the idea of recording the sound of the bees and playing that back to elephants as a much quicker and obviously safer way of testing the hypothesis.
How do you play a recording of a bee to an elephant?
Well, scratched our heads for a long time about this. Eventually, we came up with this idea that I threw a bee suit on, went out and found a beehive, and we set up a whole load of microphones around a wild African beehive, and we threw a stone into the hive. And, you know, that doesn't sound great, but we didn't kill any bees, but it did disturb the colony dramatically. And I got this incredible eruption of very angry African honeybees that swarmed out of the hive into the microphone.
This is that original recording of angry bees. Then Lucy would find a family of elephants snoozing under a tree and surreptitiously place speakers around them. Then she'd hit play on that angry bee recording or a control sound, which in this case was a waterfall. It sounds a lot like white noise. Then she watched what the elephants did.
And the results were very dramatic, highly significant, that they would not only run away from the bee sounds and not the control sounds, they would shake their heads, but they would also dust themselves.
This shaking and dusting is to shoo away any bees that might be buzzing around.
It turned out they were also rumbling to each other in infrasound as they ran away. They were actually rumbling with a very specific rumble that was literally, run away, there are bees here.
These rumbles are too low for us to hear, but elephants use them to communicate over huge distances.
And this sound was passing through the bush to other elephants who were hearing like a panic rumble from their friends.
Why does a tiny bee get such a huge reaction from an elephant?
What's extraordinary about this is they're tiny compared to an elephant. You cannot imagine that they could sting through an elephant's skin. I mean, elephant skin is 2 centimeters thick. It's completely absurd to suggest that a bee can sting. But it turns out that these bees, they focus on the watery areas. So those are the most sensitive membranes of the elephants, particularly the eyes, which of course, very thin membrane around there, and in the inside of the trunk, which is not only a thin, soft skin layer inside, but it's wet. So the bees are attracted to that kind of moisture. Behind the ears of an elephant is actually very, very thin skin. It's the only place where the blood vessels on an elephant reach the air. So that's why an elephant flaps its ears all the time, because the blood running through the back of the ears is being cooled by the thin skin there. So the bees go for these thin areas, particularly the watery areas. And if a bee stings around the eye or around the trunk, it releases a pheromone, and it's that pheromone that puffs into the air, and all the other bees are attracted to that pheromone, and then they can sting the same place. So it really is not one bee sting. It's actually the elephant has probably learned that if one bee stings, the rest are going to plunge onto the same site and start stinging multiple times. And that, of course, would be very painful and quite scary as well, having bees zooming around your face, buzzing very loudly. So we think that's what's going on. And it's really the threat of many bee stings, not just one, that's scaring them.
Lucy wondered how she could take advantage of that fear of bees to protect crops. What if you could make a fence that wasn't electrified, but beeified? Her first design for a beehive fence was scribbled on a notepad, and it was a series of beehives strung along a wire surrounding a paddock.
So that if an elephant tries to walk into the farm, it's going to hit the wire or the rope or whatever you connect the hives with, and it'll cause the hives to swing, release the bees, and that's your auto trigger to scare the elephants away.
And it worked really well. Elephants would walk into the fence, rattle the hives, the bees would fly out, and the elephant would hot-foot it out of there.
That beehive fence design was part of my PhD, and we went out and tested it. It was highly successful, and we've improved the design over time, but that very first design that I scribbled down on the back of a notepad is actually the original.
Meanwhile, Dr. Tempe Adams is in Botswana, thousands of kilometres away from Lucy in Kenya, and in a completely different environment, but of course, there are plenty of elephants. Could bee fences work in Botswana too?
So I was fascinated by this whole bee idea. So before going in and building up beehive fences and putting them up around crop fields, I just literally said, okay, let's just play the sound of African honeybee to resting, sleeping elephants, because it's a relatively low-cost experiment to go and do.
And what did you find?
It was fascinating, absolutely fascinating, because we got a mixed reaction, which was amazing.
Yeah, mixed is right. While the Kenyan elephants had a pretty consistent, oh shit, reaction to the sound of bees, not all the Botswanan elephants reacted the same way. Don't get me wrong, some did get up and run, but others just weren't fussed in the slightest.
So basically what it says is elephants do react to the sound of bees in Botswana, but they don't all react the same way. And it begs the question, and it's an obvious question, it's like, why would we maybe get this response, a mixed response? And it's quite simple and quite obvious. Well, let's look at, are these elephants coming into contact with bees often?
And this is where the difference in environment comes in. Kenya's tropical. It straddles the equator. So on the whole, it's much wetter than Botswana. And bees need water. Less water, fewer bees. Fewer bees, less chance of getting stung.
So the conclusions that we drew was that these elephants, the ones that have probably been in contact with bees before and had a negative interaction with them, then have learnt to be scared of the sound of bees. But if they haven't come across bees and they haven't had a negative interaction with them, then they don't know to be scared of them, so they won't react. We don't have many flowering plants, so we don't really have a very healthy bee population. We don't have as many bees as other countries that have consistent flowering plants available. And then I managed to dig a little deeper to actually look at the beekeeping industry in Botswana. And basically, there isn't much. And there has been a lot of initiatives to try and get beekeeping going. But they've really struggled to get bees to stay. So you might get a colony come and establish itself, but it might only be there for one season and then they go and then they don't come back. So it's a lot more about bees than elephants, actually, and better understanding the beekeeping and bee world here than the elephant world, interestingly.
Who would have thought studying the world's biggest land animals would turn into a crash course in the ecology of honeybees? But Botswana's bee-unfriendly climate might be a taste of what's to come for lusher, greener Kenya.
What we found in Kenya, we're having more and more droughts these days because of climate change. And so if you have an extreme drought for 2 years, your bees are going to basically start to suffer so badly and disappear. They're not going to breed. And a lot of our hives will just go quiet in a drought. So we might only have 10 or 15% occupation of our hives.
More empty hives mean the bee fences are, naturally, less effective. But bees aren't the only way to keep elephants away from crops. Lucy, Tempe, and others all across Africa are trialling things like asking farmers to grow crops that elephants don't find particularly tasty, or use other deterrents like a super stinky concoction made with manure and chili and other smelly ingredients. There's dozens of different methods which farmers can mix and match depending on what works for them. And Tempe, in Botswana, continues to talk to local farmers to test more elephant-discouraging ideas.
Interestingly, I've just recently had a farmer say to me she plays her radio all night and she is convinced that that keeps elephants out of her crop field. So she'll play it all through the night and then she switches it off. So maybe it's letting elephants know there's people active there chatting away. Maybe that's working. But having said that, I have had another farmer in that same area say they had the radio on in their field and I was like, oh, and how does it go? And they said the elephant came, picked up the radio and threw it against a tree. Yeah.
Well, it clearly didn't like whatever was on the station. Like, it was like, oh, why did you tune it to this one and not that one? I want Radio National.
Exactly.
Dr. Tempe Adams, an elephant biologist with the University of New South Wales. We also heard from Dr. Lucy King, coexistence director with Save the Elephants.